If you are like most people, I imagine that you find Gosling's conclusions quite incredible. But the truth is that they shouldn't be, not after the lessons of John Gottman. This is just another example of thin slicing. The observers were looking at the students' most personal belongings, and our personal belongings contain a wealth of very telling information. Gosling says, for example, that a person's bedroom gives three kinds of clues to his or her personality. There are, first of all, identity claims, which are deliberate expressions about how we would like to be seen by the world. A framed copy of a magna cum laude degree from Harvard, for example. Then there is behavioral residue, which is defined as the inadvertent clues we leave behind. Dirty laundry on the floor, for instance, or an alphabetized CD collection. Finally, there are thoughts and feelings regulators, which are changes we make to our most personal spaces to affect the way we feel when we inhabit them. A scented candle in the corner, for example, or a pile of artfully placed decorative pillows in the bed. If you see alphabetized CDs, a Harvard diploma on the wall, incense on a side table, and laundry neatly stacked in a hamper, you know certain aspects about that individual's personality instantly, in a way that you may not be able to grasp if all you ever do is spend time with him or her directly. Anyone who has ever scanned the bookshelves of a new girlfriend or boyfriend, or peeked inside his or her medicine cabinet, understands this implicitly. You can learn as much, or more, from one glance at a private space as you can from hours of exposure to a public face. Just as important, though, is the information you don't have when you look through someone's belongings. What you avoid when you don't meet someone face to face are all the confusing and complicated and ultimately irrelevant pieces of information that can serve to screw up your judgment. Most of us have difficulty believing that a 275-pound football lineman could have a lively and discerning intellect. We just can't get past the stereotype of a dumb jock. But if all we saw of that person was his bookshelf or the art on his walls, we wouldn't have that same problem. What people say about themselves can also be very confusing, for the simple reason that most of us aren't very objective about ourselves. That's why, when we measure personality, we don't just ask people point blank what they think they're like. We give them a questionnaire, like the Big Five inventory, carefully designed to elicit telling responses. That's also why Gottman doesn't waste any time asking husbands and wives point blank questions about the state of their marriage. They might lie, or feel awkward, or, more important, they might not know the truth. They may be so deeply mired, or so happily ensconced, in their relationship that they have no perspective on how it works. Couples simply aren't aware of how they sound, says Sybil Carrere. They have this discussion, which we videotape and then play back to them. In one of the studies we did recently, we interviewed couples about what they learned from the study, and a remarkable number of them, I would say a majority of them, said they were surprised to find either what they looked like during the conflict discussion or what they communicated during the conflict discussion. We had one woman whom we thought of as extremely emotional, but she said that she had no idea that she was so emotional. She said that she thought she was stoic and gave nothing away. A lot of people are like that. They think they are more forthcoming than they actually are, or more negative than they actually are. It was only when they were watching the tape that they realized that they were wrong about what they were communicating. If couples aren't aware of how they sound, how much value can there be in asking them direct questions? Not much. And this is why Gottman has couples talk about something involving their marriage, like their pets, without being about their marriage. He looks closely at indirect measures of how the couple is doing. The telling traces of emotion that flit across one person's face, the hint of stress picked up in the sweat glands of the palm, a sudden surge in heart rate, a subtle tone that creeps into an exchange. Gottman comes at the issue sideways, which, he has found, can be a lot quicker and a more efficient path to the truth than coming at it head-on. What those observers of dorm rooms were doing was simply a layperson's version of John Gottman's analysis. They were looking for the fist of those college students. They gave themselves 15 minutes to drink things in and get a hunch about the person. They came at the questions sideways, using the indirect evidence of the students' dorm rooms, and their decision-making process was simplified. They weren't distracted at all by the kind of confusing, irrelevant information that comes from a face-to-face encounter. They thin-sliced. And what happened? The same thing had happened with Gottman. Those people with the clipboards were really good at making predictions.